Meteorologist Joe Bastardi, the American Storm here. Thanks for joining. We are missing the American girl who is down in Florida. I guess she's down there a little bit of vacation. But we've got the increasingly massively legendary voice of Penn State wrestling, Jeff Byers, here. And I'm sure we've got a little bit to discuss tonight about some various things. Jeff, say hi.
Greetings, and we'll go with that. That sounds good to me.
I ran into another legendary voice in church the other day, and it's funny. We used to work together at WMAJ almost 50 years ago.
Back in the day,
Steve Jones, who broadcast football.
And basketball.
I'm sure he's a little bit jealous of you. But it was just funny.
Know about that.
It was just funny. I think people.
He's got a pretty good gig.
We both went up, and what I do is this: on Saturday afternoon, about 4:15, you can find me in the gym doing squats, just till I get totally exhausted. Then I go into a 5 o'clock Catholic mass because I came from a Catholic background. There's a real good priest there, and when you are totally and completely wiped out, you are most susceptible to just taking in information. Nothing bothers you. Seriously, like for about an hour, I still try to pound my legs hard. So for about an hour after lifting, the endorphins, at least that part of my lifting, are going. So anyway, I run into Steve. We walk up on the communion line, both of us, and then we're walking back like arm in arm going, can you believe it's been 50 years? And people in the parish know me, so they know Steve, of course. And they're looking at us going, what the heck is going on over there? But it's kind of funny about, we're so blessed, we have you and Steve Jones. I always thought Dean was good too. Dean DeVore was good. The thing is about, we had Fran Fisher before.
Yep.
And I would run into Fran. And I swear, every time I ran into Fran, I felt like I was a better person after. He had such a great ability to make you feel like you were someone.
He did.
And I'm going to tell you something. You have the same thing. Steve has the same thing. And it's just really nice to see that. Because, even though I know you're not like Boomer Esiason or something, it's just nice to see people that have worked real hard, become accomplished, but they just don't seem to forget their roots. So the humility that comes through there is pretty impressive to me.
Well, I feel like my humility is well earned. I'm just very, very fortunate. I really am to be able to have a front row seat to this era of Penn State wrestling. And I tell you, Joe, I mean, this year's team, and I know Cale does not like this kind of talk, but you knew from day one that this was a really special team. Yeah. And had a chance to do some really special things. And as we go to the NCAA tournament, and again, you got to go out and do it, and we'll see. There's nothing guaranteed, and certainly I recognize that and have been preaching that. But you look at what this team just did at the Big Ten tournament and the potential that is there. Again, only once in history has a team had 10 All-Americans, and that was in 2001. Minnesota was able to accomplish that feat. Now, when they did it, they had zero wrestlers in the finals, zero champions, zero runners up. All 10 of their wrestlers finished between third and eighth. A terrific accomplishment, again, unmatched in the history of the sport. And then Iowa, of course, in 1997, has the scoring record of 170 points, and they accomplished that by getting 6 wrestlers to the finals, 5 champions, 8 All-Americans, and they took all 10 wrestlers in their starting lineup, and all 10 won at least 3 bouts. So they had 2 guys that didn't earn All-America honors, but they won 3 bouts each. When you look at this Penn State team, again, it has a chance.
Well, that's if they let is Carter getting in?
Yeah, he'll get in with an at-large bid, and so they'll have.
Well, you know why I was thinking about that?
At least seven guys that are contenders. Again, I'm not predicting or guaranteeing anything. But I think they have seven guys that it's like, well, there's a reasonable path there for them to get to the NCAA finals. And all 10 certainly are legitimate All-American contenders. But if they get, you know, again, if they get 10 All-Americans, that matches the all-time record. Only once before was that achieved. And if they get 10 All-Americans and they do get six in the finals and five champions, I think with the bonus point capability of these guys in the early rounds, this is a team that, again, has a chance to top that 170 mark. And if it does both of those things, I mean, I just think it goes down then clearly as the greatest college team in history.
The interesting thing about this, and I... Not to you know, drop names or he's my buddy or whatever. You know, I like Cale and Casey and Cody and the staff more so for the men that they are.
Amen.
And I'm dead serious about it. You know, it was 100%. Great when they first came here. You know, I'm a former wrestler, groupie and all that, but now it's beyond that. But I will tell you something. What was interesting about Cale sort of holding Carter out. I know Carter is, you know, livid on that just because he's a competitor who has been livid. But Cale, let's say Carter had wrestled through the Big Tens and won the Big Tens and put on a performance that he was completely ready. They would have busted the Big Ten record, right? They probably would have done that because if you had six first, two seconds, and two thirds, that and with the bonus point situation, they probably would have taken out Iowa's record. I don't even know what it is, but it seems hard to believe Iowa would have had that. And
I think they still would have fallen just shy of again. Iowa had nine Big Ten champions,
did they?
In 83, they have the record of 200. Penn State finished with 171.5.
Okay, so what do you get? What do you get for first place?
Well, you get 16 for first place, and then the advancement points.
So he
would have had three advancement points,
and probably he would have racked up two or three pins.
Yeah,
so it would have been darn close.
Yeah, they would have fallen just shy, but they would have been.
All I'm saying
in the neighborhood.
It probably didn't faze him because it's difficult when you're a competitor like Carter to try to see that, you know, he's got the two back-to-back toughest tournaments in his life because everybody's going to try to knock him off this last time, although it may not be the last time. I'm trying to say, you know, I talked to Carter quite a bit. I go, do you realize you have a chance to do something no man has ever done?
And we'll likely never have a chance.
We're not going to equal.
Nobody will have the opportunity.
The next pandemic, they probably won't do the same thing that they did. But the and to come off that kind of adversity and do that is a remarkable story. But of course, you got to win four, and that's almost impossible to do. I mean, you look at the kid from Cornell, for instance, Vito. I mean, he's a world champion. Everything else. I watched his match with the kid from Lehigh.
Yeah, right. And Kirkham.
He can't do anything with him. The kid's so darn strong, and so to get through this kind of thing, even with Cale, with the, you know, his 159 wins like that, just remarkable things. I know, I'm trying to do something. When COVID came along, I made a covenant with God about something because I think I went over this last week, but. And I know, and now I'm getting sort of close to it, that and the covenant was, I know I can't do this unless I stay totally focused and, you know, get, it's got to be a divine wish, a divine vision, you know, and all that stuff. And I can't believe the stuff that's coming up. And like, for instance, I just competed a couple of weeks ago. And so I got to get 13 more placings to break the all-time record. And I have never, the one thing I've never had is a problem with something called edema, holding water, right? I mean, I can't even believe what I'm seeing now. This stuff comes up, and so I'm going to get it back to wrestling here, or even the weather, or even anything. Things come up, and it's not, it's how you react to them that really shows you where you stand, all right? And it's not so much that they actually build you. They give you a good test as to, well, where is my heart at this particular time? Anyway, let's get to the weather here because it's going to get very interesting. Severe weather outbreak Thursday into Friday in the Deep South. A real super surge of spring. You know, it was warm last week. For those of us in the Northeast, you know, we saw a one-day return to winter yesterday. We actually had it also in the Great Lakes. That went out, but the next return that's coming will set off a 2 to 3 week period of below normal temperatures. Now, it's kind of funny. I get the O'Reilly, Bill, I'm friends with Bill O'Reilly. You know, I get his premium site, and he says, you know, he had some crack today about, well, we have an early spring in the East. Well, I got to tell you, is it you know, 3 weeks from now, is it an early spring or was it a fall spring? That's the biggest thing, because if you get, you know, the cherry blossoms are 2 to 3 weeks ahead of schedule. But I'm looking at what I'm looking at, and I'm looking at the threat of near record to record cold, the threat of multiple snow events in the Great Lakes, Ohio Valley, maybe even into the Northeast. There's a possibility that next week's show, before we take off for Kansas City, if we're doing next week's show, that's your call, because when do you leave? Tuesday?
We leave Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, well, Tuesday is an interesting day as far as traveling goes. You know, it's one of the funny things that the guys go, yeah, you can't forecast the weather around here, which is interesting because you have me on the Fox over here. What I like to do on the Fox is try to give long range, some long range stuff.
Yep.
But it could get interesting. Now, we drive out there, all right? We're a low-flying jet that, you know, with Jesse and I generally drive to the Nationals. And for Christmas, she got me an Airbnb.
Oh.
Right? Well, what happened was she put the down payment down and Daddy paid the rest. But still, I don't know what to do with those Airbnbs. Although my son was up this weekend and he got us an Airbnb for A&M Notre Dame.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, so, you know, the Notre Dame quarterback.
I'll be rooting for your Aggies in that one.
Yeah, well, the Notre Dame quarterback that you saw in the bowl game, that's my brother's kid. He was training him since he was in fourth grade, Steve Angeli. And it's amazing listening to the story. I mean, if you ever see him, he's a classic pro quarterback. And, I mean, he should have won most valuable player in the game, you know, with the game he had. But on the other hand, Mike Elko, this is really interesting. Elko leaves Duke for A&M, right? The Duke quarterback, Elko's quarterback, has left and gone to Notre Dame for the fifth year because Elko's offensive coordinator took off, went to Notre Dame. And so it's the Angeli kid, and everybody's into the run-and-gun stuff. And, you know, it's kind of weird because if you're a run-and-gun quarterback and all that, you're probably going to get hurt for a couple of games the way things are, yeah. You know. Like when I look at Penn State and you know their quarterback situation, if I'm James, I'm sitting the boat down and say, listen, we're gonna put you guys in, you know, during the game. Everybody, you're both going to play because you can't prepare for one, you can't prepare for both of those guys.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens and. You know, with the Nationals ending, thank God that we have the Olympic trials up here because I'd be, you know, when Nationals end, are you just like empty?
It's a long week. Yeah, that's.
No, but I mean, that's it. There's no more. There's no more wrestling.
Yeah.
Well, you have a young family.
Oh, yeah.
And so you're occupied over there. But I'm like, well, what am I going to do now? You know, like
move your mic up just a little bit. You keep rubbing the
yeah. Well, good. All right. So, go on, Jeff.
No, go ahead. Just talk a little bit about then. So, what what are the factors that that lead you to believe? Because, you know, I'm still rooting for the groundhog here.
Well, the groundhog
is, I want the early
groundhog
spring.
Is absolutely smashing me. I mean, there's no question. I
yeah,
mean,
but I feel like you've got a mess and bring comeback
that's
here.
I don't want to see it.
I don't want to see it.
Well, you know, I'm your buddy. I thought we were friends over here.
We're friends, but I don't want the mess.
You know, that was interesting because that kid is longer and stronger than Mitchell, and he just got broke. That was a breaking, and I did not expect that he would break like that. And I don't know. It's like, what the heck? Because he's a more physical person. But you know, you get in with that little whirlwind over there. There's going to be a plus. You know, as Mitchell, I don't really know him. I try to teach him the same dance moves I taught Aaron Brooks when he was a freshman, because Aaron can't dance, right? And I can't dance either. But my wife told me how you could dance, which is you just basically stand there, point at yourself, get under a light, and pretend that you're the attraction.
There you go.
Well, there you are, Aaron. You're, you know, X time national champion. You don't need to try to bust moves and get attention. So the only time I've talked to Mitchell was he did some dance after a match one time. I said, listen, let me show you what you got to do over here, right?
Oh, boy.
But as long as he just the joy that he wrestles with.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sort of go, well, I never had that joy in wrestling, but I have that joy in the weather. I know exactly where it's coming from. Every day is a gift to me. Even if something bad happens, it's a gift to me. I got a letter today. There's a guy who is who's always a real big Weatherbell fan, and you know, when I was at AccuWeather, and he was a former translator at the UN. He was a German working with the German embassy, and this guy's like knows Russian. He knows everything, right? And I sort of got a little miffed at him because he dropped his subscription to Weatherbell, but then he still writes me about the weather. And I'm like, okay, well, I know we're friends, I know we're buddies, but I don't have time to do this, to sit there and, you know, I know that sounds pompous, and I'm probably sounding mean, but if I were to do that with every person, right?
Yeah.
It's just like I had this good friend of mine down in Texas, and he's still, I consider him a friend. He was on our commercial side, which when I was at AccuWeather. And that we only charged, we didn't charge a lot of money at AccuWeather compared to some of these other people. But he told me, I was in his house in Galveston, at just a beautiful mansion right on the beach. He says, you know how I got this house? I said, no. He said, when you made that change with Katrina, I changed all my positions and made $30 million, right? Because Katrina, everybody thought it was going to Pensacola. And I called my clients 2 o'clock on Friday, said, no, it's going to New Orleans, right through the heart of all the oil rigs and all this other stuff that's going on. And so now he's just a premium member, right? And if you're listening, you know who you are. I'm sitting there going, if I made you all this money and you said that I did this, at least you could have done it was be a commercial member because it's not that much more expensive. And I have a tough time a lot of times with that stuff where, you know, people want information, and I could tell what they're doing. They're probing. You know, I'll get a letter that says,
yep,
"Hey, so and so says this," and I'll write immediately back, "Well, I don't know. I'm not looking at what so and so is doing. I'm looking at the weather." And then they'll say, "Well, what do you think?" I go, "Well, go look at Weatherbell." I mean, what are we supposed to do?
That's the reason we post it there.
Yeah, that's the reason we post it there. But there's a lot going on here. We'll get to you weather and climate people. The national NOAA has just okay. We have the gold standard of measuring ENSO events is called the multivariate ENSO index. This has been in existence since 1950. It was upgraded. It was upgraded, I think, in 1980 to 82, version 2, all right? So we have this multivariate ENSO index. And what it does is it just doesn't measure water temperatures. It measures the actual reaction of the atmosphere, puts in all these variables to say, well, how is this El Nino comparing to another El Nino? It's a beautiful scale. Since the 97 Super Nino, right, that 97 Super Nino went off, we have switched from an El Nino-based state to a La Nina-based state in the atmosphere. Now, you may say, well, wait a minute, La Nina is cooling. The reason why we are in a La Nina-based state is because it's a reaction to all the warming. Generally, when you're in an El Nino-based state, it's a reaction to the air being quite cold, right? Because there's all this balance in there. But here's the crazy thing, folks. The La Nina-based state and the Ninos that are going off cannot be linked with carbon dioxide. There's no way that man-made climate change can be linked to that. So what happens is that you have... You literally have this tool, and I use it for weather forecasting, that they just discontinued out of the clear blue sky. The last thing you want to do is discontinue data sources. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. It's not like this thing is a version of a computer model and you're stepping up to another computer model. They're taking away a huge tool. And I can't help but believe they're taking away that tool because this year, it showed that there was no true linkage between the El Nino, the El Nino in the eastern Pacific, and what the atmosphere was doing. In fact, in the western Pacific, the Southern Oscillation Index, which is run by Australia, and so they can't take that away, all right? The Southern Oscillation Index never reached an El Nino this year. I've never seen anything like it, right? Now, what does this mean? It means that the sudden warming that you saw occur last year, since the El Nino did not come on until mid and late last year, that sudden warming has to be tied to the volcano that put all the water vapor in the air. It can't be anything else, right? So what happens is this volcano goes off, it changes a bunch of things, it causes a reaction in the rest of the planet. It negates the El Nino, and basically people say, well, we had this strong El Nino, so that's why it was so warm. That's not what really happened, in my opinion. What happened was we stayed in the La Nina-based state, which is naturally tries to be warm, even though that El Nino came on in that area of the ocean. Now, the plot thickens even further. The worst thing you could do, as I said before, is get rid of data sources, all right? You need the data. And data is not a computer model. That's a virtual representation of a future event. What we need is the actual data so we can see what's going on. In the oceans, we have a data point every 112,000 square miles down to 6,000 feet in the oceans, right? These buoys that measure what's going on in the ocean. The problem is one data point every 112,000 square miles. Just around State College, there are 8 mesonet stations, the Landings, Port Matilda. I look at what the temperatures are doing every morning, right?
Yeah.
So you have a saturation of data sources in the atmosphere, but since the oceans have all the energy, you have very, very sparse data, and no one has any urgency about getting that corrected. And I'll tell you why. Because it's very interesting what's going on, Jeff, because something funky is going on in that the computer models are predicting a big cool down in the sea surface temperatures, especially in the Pacific, over the next 9 months. I mean, I've never seen such a drop forecasted. So those buoys must be seeing cooling going on in a lot of the oceans at around 6,000 feet, wherever they are. So they're seeing the cooling in it. And then the model gets that data. But it's so small a representation of data, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is, I talked to Dr. Arthur Vitorito, who's my geologist friend, and sure enough, there's been a downtick in geothermal activity, right? Now, we don't know if this is going to continue because the geothermal activity is reported 3 months after it happens. So you can't tell what the heck is going on until it's too late. this is what blew the winter forecast. That blew the winter for what happened around. And I keep people, a lot of the people in the field, the stars just making an excuse. No, that's not what I'm not making an excuse. The big shooting match is what goes on around Australia. If the water is warm around Australia, it's very difficult to have a cold winter in the eastern United States. Now, what happened was when this El Nino was coming on, the water was forecast to be normal to below around Australia, warm in the western Indian Ocean. This would mean that the Madden-Julian Oscillation should react a certain way. So the basis of the winter forecast was that we were going to see the MJO. You know, I'm on good enough speaking terms with that, that I can call that oscillation that. We're best buddies. That was going to be in different phases from last year. Well, guess what happened? The January cold wave came and got destroyed as the MJO rotated around into those warm phases. It did it again in February. Winter came on for 10 days, boom, right into the warm phases. Well, guess what it's doing now? And a lot of this has to do with the fact that once you start changing the seasons, the reactions are different. Boom, it's circling through the warm phases right into the cold phases for the last 10 to 15 days of March, front part of April, right? It's putting lipstick on a pig as far as my forecast goes, but it's there. But my point to all of you that are listening, if you need data. You can't just assume that the model is data. And I've always been fascinated. Latest data shows this. No, a computer model is a mathematical representation of an event, a future event. It's not the actual what is going on. Okay, yeah. So this is a problem. Now, I've got more here, all right? I'm just warming up. I feel like Frank Costanza at Festivus. John Kerry, I don't know if I brought this up, his parting shot as climate czar could have been one of the, it's hard to believe how this man plumbs the depths of ignorance. He said that people might feel better about Russia's worldly situation if they cut their climate, their carbon footprint. I mean, I can't even believe that someone would say that. Are you that out of touch? Now listen to this one. They're cutting down 120,000 trees in that ancient forest in Germany, right? The Grimm's fairy tales and all that stuff. You know why? They're going to put up wind turbines. Look, you environmentalists out there, what are you doing? How is this not causing? I see these people gluing themselves to artwork, blocking highways, all this climate psychosis over nothing,
yep.
Given the fact, I mean, the statistics are absolutely amazing. We have five times the amount of people on the planet since 1900 with 1/50th the amount of climate deaths, okay? Per capita income has increased sevenfold, all right? Poverty has gone down sevenfold. I mean, these statistics, and you've got these people doing this. Do you understand how irrational the reaction is to nothing? The German forest thing really got me.
Listen, that's...
Jeff, they claim that Germany's forests are dying because of climate change. So what is the solution? Let's chop down 120,000 ancient trees. That's like going into the Redwood Forest. Let's go chop down the Redwood Forest. All right. Now, not only that is, and you replace them with these monstrosities that basically wear out every 20 years. But what about the 6 million pounds of carbon dioxide those trees are taking out of the air?
Well, and we don't know the impact that the windmills are having on the overall ecology. Like, there's still a lot of...
I mean, you're basically destroying life.
Well, yes, between the birds and, you know, I'm telling you, I think eventually we're going to find out that there's, you know, we're having all these problems with the bees over here.
Too many or too few?
Too few. They're
well, I'm allergic to
dying
bees.
Off. But they're vitally important to the overall ecology, and I think eventually we're going to find out there is some link here.
But it's going to be too late.
Yes, and that is my whole frustration is at this point we now know how to mitigate the issues that do come with drilling for oil and with the production of petroleum products across the board, and we know how to mitigate it. We've been doing that for a long time, and in the United States in particular, we have it down to where it's a relatively small effect on the environment. And we're rushing into these other things that we don't know what the impact is, and nobody seems to care. Nobody's even pausing to say, wait, let's at least do some studies, some controlled studies here, and see. It's like, well, no, we're just going to wave a magic wand, and by doing the windmills and the solar, there will be no impact on the environment. And obviously, that is patently absurd.
Well, the solar.
There's obviously an impact. Now, the question is, to what degree is that impact? And, you know,
I don't see any positives. Here's the positives I see. If you install a wind device on your own home and put solar panels on your home, that's great because you mitigate your if you're into that, that's fine. But entire fields, wait, let me get this out here. I was stunned at looking at this. I didn't think about this before. Do you know these solar panels? You know what the temperature rises to 5 to 6 inches above the solar panels? It rises to 70 degrees Celsius. So these solar panels, right? What happens is they're absorbing heat and releasing heat. We are destroying, even over here at State College on the side of the mountain here with the hospital.
Yep.
You have destroyed an entire minor ecosystem, the kind of thing that Winnie the Pooh and his buddies would live in. And what are you replacing it with, right? And I'll tell you what, when I went to Rhode Island a couple of weeks ago, I was driving back. I go, what the heck is going on over here? I mean, as ugly as parts of New England are in that Connecticut Turnpike Alley, they're out to make it even uglier. I can only imagine. I saw the same thing up in Maine. I mean, Maine is just a beautiful, pristine state. Bulldozing forest and putting solar panels
yeah.
up, which is really intelligent in Maine, right? I mean, first of all, the low sun angle. I mean, maybe in the summertime, it doesn't get as hot in Maine. What do you think is going to happen in winter? Those solar panels aren't going to do a darn thing in the winter. And I just think there's a time and a place for it. I am not anti-progress. And I tell people this. I like what they're doing in Texas. All the new houses that they're building, you know, these one-story flat out. They put solar panels on top of it. That's a pretty good idea. It's not affecting anything. Of course, when hailstorms come, you're in a lot of trouble, right? I mean, you have hail sales with cars. I guess we're going to have hail sales with solar panels, too.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but there's a lot of lunacy this week.
There is.
Okay, so my cousin, I'm not going to say who, says that he heard from a relatively reliable source, which means it's
not reliable.
Well, let's put it this way. The cousin I'm talking about, I'm not going to say who he is a very extremely successful person.
Yeah.
All right? He's also a Nikki Haley guy. All right? And I understand perfectly why, for instance, I think my personal opinion is Nikki Haley would clean the floor with Joe Biden. People go, I don't like this policy or that policy. You want to know something? We are so far gone. Just getting us back in the middle is step one, like Ronald Reagan used to say. I'll get 60 to 70%. Now, that don't get me, don't start saying, oh, Bastardi's voting for Haley. I didn't say that. What I said was that my cousin, who is a very reasonable human being, extremely successful, I understand his position. All right. I understand. I mean, when you get a situation where Donald Trump is accused of raping someone in a store's where was it? In a closet in a store when he has his multi-million-dollar hotel sitting right across the street 30 years later. And people say he's. And meanwhile, you got Biden with Tara Reid plus about another eight people. You have Stephanopoulos this weekend just going after a former rape victim that's a Republican that will be says she's voting for Trump. He just, with Clinton, don't you remember the bimbo eruptions? He was the guy that put all that stuff down.
Oh, yeah.
So we are what I'm saying is, we are dealing with very warped situations over here. The same statistician that took down Michael Mann's hockey stick and basically said he chose two options out of 22, he just proved that there's no way that there were that many women and children being killed as Hamas is reporting. You know what they're doing? They're simply reporting the same things every day and increasing. They keep the same percentages. And he said that's not how natural numbers actually evolved. Where every day there's 70% women and children are killed. So you get these statisticians that know this stuff inside and out. Anyway, and my point circling back is we don't really know what's going on. But I just found it odd that everybody is dismissing this guy from the Penn Wharton Business School, who's supposedly the most brilliant statistician in the United States. They dismissed him with Michael Mann, you know, with what he brought up about the hockey stick. They dismiss him with this. Getting back to my cousin, all right, I said, what the heck is Biden on? I mean, when I watched that speech, I paid zero attention to what he was saying because I know what he's saying is just a lot of it's lies, all right? Now, you know, people go, everybody lies. Okay, fine. But he was shot out of a cannon. He was very impressive. The guy was right. And I see this, one day he'll look like he's, wow, man, this guy is spot on. Another day, I mean, he just asked the people for Pennsylvania to vote for him for Congress this weekend, right?
Yep.
So I said to my cousin, I do know that human growth hormone is a big deal among older, richer people, done under a doctor's care, right? But that would lead to a constant personality that is energetic. For instance, I have no proof of this. I would say that, when you get to be that age, the reason I wouldn't take it is because I'm competing, right? I want to see what God gave me. That's exactly why I stay away from this stuff.
Yeah.
I want to know what I could do. But that being said, if I were running for president, okay, you see what RFK Jr. looked like, right? And he admits, I take testosterone replacement, treatments, okay? That isn't him then. That is an extra that comes into him. Always energetic, always on point. No variance up and down. Trump, for whatever you want to say about him, he's the same Donald Trump all the time, right?
Yeah.
So Biden is, you know, one time I look at him, I go, holy smokes. And another time I go, holy smokes the other way. So I asked my cousin, I said, what the heck's going on? I mean, you know this stuff. And he says, Adderall and Vivace, right? And I'm sitting there going, Adderall and Vivace. Now, you couldn't pay me to take Adderall, but sometimes because I made a joke. I said, I'd like to be whatever he's on, right? But and a lot of people take Adderall, all right. And when I was in the gyms, the big thing was Ritalin. Guys would take Ritalin and Dianabol together all the time, right? Because the Ritalin would fire them up. And of course, the Diana ball is making you stronger. So basically, we've got a case of, who the heck is running the show over here? Are the drugs running the show or whatever? But when I saw the speech, I got in a fight. You know, my wife is screaming at the TV and yelling at the TV. And I said, this is a great speech. By that, I mean, the average American that doesn't know what's going on, the 32 million that tuned in, said, what the heck are people talking about? Guy's spot on, right? Even though he apparently the memes were the GIFs were funny, I guess, after. And it's something that you can't make light of, but people were saying, wow, we lost, the Southern California football coach, because he called Lincoln Riley, but what everybody was screaming about was, you said this is illegal, or that's illegal, or whatever, and yet 10 years ago, they all were saying the same thing.
Yep.
So, this whole thing, I always try to preach linkage. I was listening to Levin tonight, and he was talking about the statistician that has come up with the, he estimates that 12,500 Hamas fighters have been killed and maybe 6,000 to 7,000 civilians, all right? Based on, he explained the entire thing as to what Hamas is up to,
yeah,
in reporting, and that the United States and the whole bunch of them are just taking whatever Hamas tells them and thinking it's the truth, right? So, and of course, Biden with his usual, I'm such a tough guy. I'm going to push Bibi Netanyahu. Can you imagine that? Bibi Netanyahu's fighting in the Yom Kippur War and what he's done. Now, you may not like Netanyahu, but I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to get into a ring with that guy, okay? He's an IDF and all that other stuff. All right, so, but the same thing, the same statistician that took that apart, and it's going to be on marklevin.com, so you folks can read it if you want, right? And he will explain to you why those numbers are wrong. He took Mann's hockey stick apart, which made perfect sense. And that Dr. Mann basically tried to thread a needle and say, out of the 22 possibilities, the two are the ones to use, all right? The hockey stick is not really a hockey stick. It's a bucket, all right? Because it was just as warm in the medieval warm period, and then you had the decline, right? You had the little ice age, and then we've been coming back up out of the little ice age of late, right? But what I found fascinating was that the same guy, now Mann's in the Biden Center over there in which is, supposedly had $55 million funding from the Chinese. Mann's in the Biden Center. Here's this guy in the Wharton Business School, right? And I'm watching all this go on going, I wonder what the heck, what the heck's going on over there, Because he's taken it apart. So we have a guy, as you know, Tommy Statt, the statistician for Penn State Wrestling. And he's fascinating to talk to with all this stuff. But you know what, folks? In the end, if you're still here, I'm glad you stayed on and listened. But I'm going to tell you, don't trust me. All I'm saying is go look, will you? Would you at least look at the other side of the issue? Let me tell you something. The CO2 back radiation theory is a beautiful theory. It explains everything. If it's the only thing you're going to look at, it'd be the equivalent of me going into a wrestling tournament and all my opponents a buy and forfeit. Simply do not put anything in the way. I will win every wrestling tournament with no opposition. You're looking at CO2 and what they've done, and in many, many aspects of your life, and let me tell you something, we're getting pulled into an abyss that we're not going to be able to get out of. I hate to say it. But it's your responsibility, not mine, to go and look at these things and see what the heck is going on. I don't care if it's weather or whatever. But, I've exhausted everybody. I know, I can see Jeff over there falling asleep. But, I'll tell you, fine. I didn't tell the joke of the day.
Oh, yeah, to finish up with a good joke.
All right, well, did I tell the one about the dog?
Give me more.
Well, the guy, his wife says, the stray dog keeps showing up on our porch, right? And I won't do that joke, all right? I'll do this joke, all right?
All right.
All right. So I might have told this joke too. I'm not sure. Geez, I don't know what I'm going to do here. The problem is I hear these jokes over and over again.
Yeah.
And I can't, but I have to, I have to come up with a joke of the day. I'm going to do a very, very simple joke, okay? Because I'm a simple person. And I can tell Jeff wants to get out of here because Reggie and Marissa will probably say, where the heck are you? Why did the chicken stop in the middle of the road?
Why did the chicken stop in the middle of the road?
Because he wanted to lay it on the line.
Ah, there you go.
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
It had to be the egg.
I know the answer to it, but this is a family show, so everyone, when we're signing off now, we will have a podcast next week with the return of the American girl who is in Florida and will be going up 441 on her way back right through Gainesville, as if you ever listen to that song, The American Girl. By the way, I did appear at the Yale House the other night.
Nice.
Tommy wasn't playing, so Victor and the Icons were. And they let me sing Running Down a Dream.
Beautiful.
It was just that I actually saw it was pretty darn good, right? You know, you couldn't hear me, but that's why it was pretty darn good. All right, everybody, Wang Chung tonight. That's it for now. Enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.